Ladies and gentlemen, I'm taking my stand-up comedy show Roleplay on tour across Northern Ireland this summer. Starting May, going through June to July. I'm starting off this Friday night, the 10th of May and the 11th of May in the Lyric Theatre in Belfast. Then next week, I'm heading across the Antrim on the 18th. I've got all the tour dates here. I'll just run through them real quickly. 18th of May in the Courthouse in Antrim. And then in June, I'm in Portaferry. I've been correctly told it's not Ards. It's Portaferry at the Portico on the 8th of June. The 14th, we're at the Ardoan in Enniskillen. The 15th, in Daly's in Oma. The 16th, we're in Brickwork in Derry. The 21st, we're in the Marketplace in Armagh. 22nd, we're in the Braid in Ballymena. Then into July, the 4th of July, for any Americans out there, we are in the Terrace, Mara Felt. The 5th of July, we're in Kiwis in Portrush in the North Coast. The 12th of July, are we taking a break? No. We're heading to Strabane, to the Boiler Room. And then last but not least, we're finishing the show on the 13th of July at the Church Arts Centre in the old church, should I say, Arts Centre in Cushendun. Tickets are available now. You can follow the link in the description of this podcast and get on them soon. A lot of the tickets have gone pretty well. Some need a wee bump, i.e. Antrim, but Ardoan, boom. But anywhere else is doing pretty well. So thank you to anyone who's bought tickets so far, and I can't wait to see you on tour. The Slag Eye Podcast is on Patreon. The Patreon over there is supporting the growth of the podcast. Now, things at the minute, we're on a wee bit of a We're in a wee bit of a transitional period. We're switching things over from the old look of the Slag Eye Podcast into the new look. So very soon these curtains, these drapes will be removed and the new studio will be presented for all you guys. And that's all the guys on Patreon who have allowed that to happen. So thanks to everybody that is on Patreon already. And if you just want to get over there, there's an archive of old podcasts. There's litanies of vlogs. There's everything else that you want. If you enjoy this podcast, you just go to patreon.com/slagguypodcast or follow the link in the description. There are big things coming and you want to get in there soon. That was creepy, but more creepy. The Slag Eye Podcast is brought to you in association with Modest Beer. Modest Beer are the champions. They are the beer of beers. They're the tastiest beer. They're made locally. What else is better than a local beer that's from right here? And there you go. They're not even paying me to write slogans for the company, but I do it anyway every week in this podcast. If you want to know more about Modest Beer other than just what I'm telling you, you can head to their website, www.modestbeer.co.uk, where you can see all the range of the beers that they have, all the range of the merch that they have. You can also sign up to receive in your email the Modest Beer Brews Letter, which is like news, but they switch brews because beer is... You want to get that, you head over to their website, you subscribe to their brews letter, you get it, keep up to date with all things Modest. And then when you're hitting the checkout, you're like, you know what, this is, I like this, but it's cost of living crisis, things are a little bit tough. You want a discount? Sly PA 15, tell them Davey sent you, don't worry about it. Modest Beer.
Oh, what? I'm the Slag Guy.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Slag Eye Podcast. How is everybody in the world doing, wherever you're listening to this, whatever, maybe watching it? You know, this is the thing that I always forget about. The podcasts are no longer just what podcasts were originally. They're like little chat shows, aren't they? They're like little conversations, little moments in time captured for people to watch on their tellies, which shows the advancement, because YouTube used to just be phones, computers. Whoa, I'm an old guy. But nowadays, everyone's watching it. It's a good time. And listen, wherever you're getting it, I hope yous are feeling well. I just wanted to come straight off the bat and say I am feeling good. We have got to the other side of the Belfast Marathon. Team 1L Studios went and we ran the relay. We did it for the NI Hospice and it's over. It's in the rear view mirror and we did it. We succeeded. We got over the line. It was fun. Let's not lie. It was enjoyable. However, it was not easy, I would say. As a man who... whose 6-year-old daughter was told in advance, your dad is running a marathon, responded sincerely by saying, I didn't know daddy could run. That shows you where we're at. But we did it, we got through it, and it was an unbelievable experience overall. The team did great, I must say. In terms of getting over the line to win the medals, the boys carried me. Not literally, but figuratively speaking, I was a slow coach, but got over the line, did it. You know, it was one of those weird things at the very outset. You know, if you'd gone back to December time and gone, would you have run in the marathon? I'd have gone 0%. 0%. But we got there. It's a good achievement. It's a nice wee feather in the cap, and I'm really chuffed. We've succeeded with raising the amount of money that we wanted to do for the NI Hospice. The link to donate, if you haven't donated and you wish to, is going to be active now until Friday. So I'll be there until tomorrow. So if you want to head on over and donate even, you know, a little amount, it really, really helps. A great cause it is, the NI Hospice. So I appreciate that. It was a fun experience. It was a beautiful day for running a marathon. I certainly am very relieved to be over it, to be honest. It was one of those things that I knew going into it was not going to be one of my strong suits, because here's the thing, I'm too heavy. I've got knees that can't cope with it. And although I've lost a bit of weight from the turn of the year, still lots to go, you know. So the fact that I got through it, I'm delighted with myself. And it was just actually more fun experience than I thought it was going to be. Obviously, I fell during the marathon. So if any of you guys in the Ormond Road saw me fall, please keep that to yourselves. And if you have any video footage, never let it see the light of day. But that was an embarrassing moment. Probably one of the most embarrassing moments of my whole entire life. But listen, it's for a good cause, and that's the reason. And again, anyone looking to do something that pushes you outside your comfort zone, give it a rattle. Do you know what I mean? Because you can... I think people too, it's too often not, it's easy to just go nah to something, isn't it? It's easy to go, I don't want to do it. I can't do whatever. I can't run, but somehow managed to get through a leg of the marathon. So anything's possible. I just think that it's pushing your comfort zones is a key thing to do. And that's, if there's anything I've learned out of it, that's it. You got to push yourself a little bit to do things that you don't want to do, things that make you uncomfortable, because then in the end, afterwards, you feel a real sense of accomplishment when you do it. And the build-up to it was great too. The team, big shout-out to Dan, Fosty, James McKegney, Darren Matthews, the boys, did unbelievable. The build-up to it was great crack. See, doing it as part of a team, really good fun. It all got us a little bit fitter, got us a wee bit more sort of tuned in and had a goal to work towards, which, I mean, I think is a big thing. You know, if I'm speaking to anybody about anything in life, and you're finding any struggles, which let's be fair, we all have it. We all have sometimes times where it's difficult to get yourself going. You know what I mean? It's hard to work towards something. I'm a master procrastinator. Like, I for many a year would have argued. I'd be like, how dare you say this? I procrastinate. Please, until one moment, Catherine caught me doing something, and I was like, yeah, I've been scooped here. I was sitting on the laptop beside her. We were watching something on the TV. I was working. I had a deadline to get something finished, working. And I was getting stressed out about not getting work done. I was like, fuck, so much work to do here. I'm getting nowhere with it. Whoa. And she was like, you're not working. And I was like, bitch, please. Excuse me. What do you think this is? And she goes, look at your screen. I went, hmm? She goes, look at your screen. And I looked at my screen, and I was like, yes. She goes, what's that got to do with work? And I was like, what's what got to do with work? What are you looking at? And I looked, and I was like, Robert Mugabe? And she went, yeah, what's Robert Mugabe got to do with your work? And I was like, well, nothing. She goes, why are you looking Google images of Robert Mugabe? And I just said to her, well, I just wanted to see what he was up to. Now, this is obviously before he died, because it would be really weird if I just wanted to know. But she's like, not only are you looking at photos of him, you're 8 pages into the Google image search. Like, you're not just, oh, wonder where he's at. You're deep in it. I was like, well, I guess I do procrastinate then, don't I? Fuck. So after that moment, I had to try to focus my mind a bit better on things. And I find to have a target to work towards always helps. So having this to work towards, albeit it was just like an impending sense of anxiety to get over the line. But we got there. It's done. And now... my thought was that was the end of it. I never want to ever run again. But having done it, I now want to shift some more weight and keep on running. Try and keep on going and then do it again next year and hopefully be faster and fitter and sustain a run for longer. That's the plan. But the whole experience was great. You know, big shout out to everybody that did it, everyone who's gone. And you know what? See, if you're doing a marathon, big respect. See, if you're doing it for a charity and a good cause, even better, big respect to you. And I really appreciate everyone who's done that. Everyone has their reasons for doing anything. It's an unbelievable undertaking, whether it's a marathon you're doing, whether it's the full route, whether it's a leg, whether it's a walking marathon. There's people in wheelchairs on like bikes. And I mean, fair play to anybody that gets out of their pit and undertakes something, it's worth doing. And like, if people want to be a wee dick about you and be like, oh, you're only doing this, you're still doing something, aren't you? You're putting the money where the mouth is. And you're quite literally raising money. So fair play to everyone that did it. I'm delighted we did it. That being said, sore feet now. Now, blisters definitely. Did I wake up the night of the run a few times during the night and think I broke my foot. Yes, but it turns out I had a wee condition called plantar fasciitis, which basically means you've strained some sort of tendon at the bottom of your foot, which I translate to being you're putting too much weight through that foot of yours too often, so lose weight, big Davey. So that's the plan now, moving on from the marathon, is to try and keep myself fighting fit, you know, especially with going on tour. That's another thing. It's starting this weekend, Friday night. I keep saying Saturday because it feels like it's starting on Saturday, but it starts on Friday in the Lyric. I'm in two nights in the Lyric, darling, in the theatre, because obviously, as regular listeners will know, I'm a serious actor, and that's what serious actors do, perform in the theatre. Now, am I going to bring a lowbrow, toilet humour-filled show into a place where the likes of, I don't know, can't even think of tremendous actors offhand because I'm just so self-obsessed that I can only think about myself. You know, are you going to be in a place where the works of Shakespeare performed? Yes. There you go. I'm so disrespectful. I can't think of a really talented local actor. I'll tell you why I can't. Because the only motherfucker whose name I can get in my head is Sir Ian McKellen. And I know he's not from here. Van Morrison. There you go. Van Morrison will be there. Maybe not. I don't know. Shut up. But the tour starts there, then I'm in Antrim the next week, which, by the way, Davey doesn't have a big fan base in Antrim. So if you're an Antrim person, you know anyone in the Antrim region, if you know anyone landing in their airplane, you're like, I have a few hours to kill in between flights, get yourself down to the old courthouse and come and see my show on the 18th of May. It'll be a good time. But this is why this week's podcast isn't a brand new episode. This is why this week's episode of the Sly Guy podcast is a vintage episode. It's a classic which has been pulled from the bookshelves of the Patreon exclusive podcast. Now, we did a series of guest episodes on Patreon back when I just did solo episodes here. So this is, I think, one of the best episodes of the Sly Guy podcast by far. Now, I need to caveat that by saying, if you're watching it, yes, this was probably a couple of years ago. Yes, I have full set of hair. A full head of hair, not a full set of hair. That'd be weird. But a full head of hair, I look younger and fresher. And also, the only good thing about that is that the entire way through the episode, my face is covered by a microphone. So yes, I look sweet in it, and I look younger and healthier and fitter and better, but you can't see my face. So if you're listening to this via audio only, you'll have a great time. However, you'll miss the big surprise at the end of the podcast. So what I would say to do is, don't worry too much about my face being covered. Just watch my guests, and then at the end you'll see the glorious surprise, which is me shitting myself on a podcast, not literally, but figuratively speaking. So it's worth watching. But this week's episode was my guest episode with none other than David and Joe from Hawkwalks NI. For people who are going, that's pretty random, Dave, what is Hawkwalks NI? Hawkwalks NI is a falconry experience. Hawkwalks! That's my falcon impression. For anyone who doesn't know, falcons are big, scary birds. But David and Joe have trained these birds into being entertainment machines. These are wild predators who know a thing or two about birds, no. And so they're wild predators who Dave and Joe have trained into being unbelievable athletes. Like myself, like these guys are, these birds are athletes like me. And Hawkwalks NI offers brilliant experiences. You can do hikes with the hawks. You can go and see them. You can do tricks. It's well worth doing. Go to their website. It's in the description of the video. And book yourself a falconry experience. Go and see these hawks in action. Go for a hike with a hawk. And you will literally have a moment to remember for the rest of your life. Like I did when I got to meet Loki towards the end of this episode. So guys, again, thanks for bearing with us. Sticking with us, it's been a busy old week, and I appreciate it, but yeah, I just wanted to jump on, give you the lowdown of what was happening, say thank you to everybody that has donated to the NI Hospice as part of our marathon team. Again, this link will expire on Friday, so if you want to be quick and donate a couple more pounds to the link, please do it. It goes to a great cause, and it was well worth it. So guys, thank you very much for the support so far, and please enjoy this week's episode of the Sly Guy Podcast with myself and David and Joe from Hawkwalks NI. So guys, welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on.
I did an introduction there. So it's weird what has happened is I'll have done this, then I'll at the end go back in time as opposed to be what's after this before, if that makes sense. So that's why I know I'm a bit stressed, because he told me something that stressed me out a little bit. But guys,
I've seen the sweat start.
It just started, but we're okay. You're looking around going, this is Joe and David from Hawkwalks NI, and you're looking around probably watching this going, is there a hawk? No. I've said no hawks at all. Promise?
No promises.
No promises, right?
Well, no, it's not a hawk.
It's not a hawk.
Well, there you go. As long as there's not a hawk.
There's no hawks.
That's okay. I'll be fine. But we can bring something in later. We'll see how it goes. For now, I feel confident.
Good.
Anyway, but listen.
Hope it lasts.
Yes, so do I. Well, thanks anyway for coming in, first of all.
Yeah.
Starting out, again, I've said to you beforehand, there's a lot of pressure here, mainly from my wife.
Yeah.
Because she was the one that recommended getting you in. So for anyone that doesn't know, Hawkwalks NI, what's it about?
It's an experience program that we started 4 years ago, just coming up to 4 years ago. It's about birds of prey, so getting people introduced into nature again.
Okay.
I think especially over COVID and, you know, that whole lockdown situation, everybody was buying a dog. I think dog market went up. Everybody's getting rich off bulldogs now.
That's my sideline.
Yeah. But it was about people getting back out into nature. So I think we had a really nice time where people were wanting to get back in and connect with nature again. I suppose birds of prey was a forte that we had, so it worked.
Was that something then that, in terms of COVID, were you in business before COVID started?
Just before, which was a panic station.
Right, so how then did that, did you use then, was it something you did like as a hobby at the start, or was it?
So I started falconry 16 years ago.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I was one of the kids that was just fishing around the rivers all day, loving nature, seen a buzzard come down, take a rabbit for the first time, and I ran the whole way home, burst in the door to my mom, there's an eagle down the river path, it was the size of this room, you know.
Buzzing?
Buzzard.
Because I was going to say, if I saw that, I would have stood there and gone, oh no,
shocked.
They're coming for us.
But no, she got me a bird of prey book, started looking at birds of prey in a different light, started photography, and then got into falconry when I was about 20, 21. But it never was a business until four years ago. I was stuck in an office environment looking after, you know, warehouse environment, and lorry drivers, and it just drove me insane. And I needed out back into nature again. My wife, Jo, she says, look, go back to what you love, do something you love, you never work again.
Because that's what I think is an interesting thing, because for me, whenever I sort of started to having guests on the podcast, it was at the time when I kind of just took the jump from the day job into doing comedy full time. So it's always interesting to speak to people to know what was the moment that made you go from maybe a hobby into being a business, and what was that moment?
I suppose it was near.
The moment is probably the fact that I have always lived my life where I've just done the job that I've loved.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, life is actually for a living, and your work is actually very important in life. And if you can enjoy it, then that's kind of half of your life.
Joe's a huge impact on it. You know, she was a dancer by trade, traveling the world, and I could see the joy she had out of life as a whole, you know what I mean? Not just when she came home and away from the work and packed up, you know, at 5 o'clock and come into the kids and the family. She just loved life, and I wanted a piece of that. So doing something I enjoyed like falconry was the next step, so that's when we started.
And so for the job you're doing, you said you're working in a warehouse at the time. So did you start something maybe like as a hobby to begin with? Were you doing something like the shows?
Well, we started doing the hawk walks, which was just with one species, the bird, the Harris hawk. And it's a very personal interaction with a bird of prey. So we started doing that at the weekends, and it was normally friends and family. And we were doing that, getting them to advertise it for us, you know, by saying, look, we've done this, put pictures up on social media. And it snowballed really quickly.
But there was also a lot of information David was even telling me that I never understood about birds. Yeah. I mean, I've always liked birds and I've loved nature.
Yeah.
Never understood. And the more stories he told me about them, I always said to him, you need to tell that to clients, because that's something that's really interesting that I've never known about. So it creates a lovely story throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah. And whenever you met for the first time, you were obviously into the birds at that stage.
No. I gave it up for 2 years.
Right, okay. I always imagine like the first stage of, you know, when you go to someone's house, like you go to his house and you just have like
birds
like in the aviary everywhere. Is it?
No, at the start, that was a stage where I gave up falconry for about 2 or 3 years. Just because of work commitments, I had to give up falconry. And giving it up probably was a huge part of, you know, missing something. It was like a piece of, you know, it was like somebody taking away comedy for you.
See, that's I think that's on a similar level. That was probably what lockdown was a wee bit.
Yeah.
You know, because I think for me at the start of it, I quickly went, well, I'm not going to be able to do stand-up, so what else can I do? So I think that's when I started doing more in lines of the podcast and with, like, writing things. So that's what sort of made me do the leap, was I got a few things in development written-wise. Yeah. So that's kind of how that happened.
And when you have a niche of something like that there, it becomes, it's easy to talk about.
Yeah.
It's easy to be a self-advertisement. Yeah. Go, this is how I live, this is what we do, this is what we enjoy, this is what our passion is.
And again, something that I'm interested in, like, and when you say falconry, what, how does it start as, like, a hobby? When do you get the birds involved? How do you get birds? And how do you like, do you go to a farm and be like, mate, you've birds,
can I get,
like,
one of them?
Yeah.
It's a huge commitment to start with, you know, like, it's 24/7, it's Christmas Day, we're up feeding, watering birds, looking after them, weighing them, making sure they're all healthy, so it's a huge commitment to start with.
It's more of a lifestyle.
It is.
Yeah.
Than a job.
Yeah. But years ago, you're talking 15 years ago, 16 years ago, I was into photography, and a guy said, look, would you mind taking pictures of my birds?
Yeah.
So went and took a few pictures of his hawks, and, you know, I had a big camera lens, and I was standing at the bottom of the hill waiting for this bird to be released, and it was chasing a rabbit. It was a hunting day. And this goshawk came off down the hill, and it was chasing her up two inches behind its backside, twisting left and right. It missed it, it veered off, went back up the hill, and he looked down and he goes, well, did you get any good pictures? And I was like, ah. Just totally blown away by the whole situation. So I pestered that fella every weekend. You know, he said, be at my house at 9 o'clock on a Saturday or Sunday. I was there at 8:30.
Yeah.
Looking at his bedroom window, looking like a creep.
With the camera.
With the camera. Waiting for him to wake up and let me learn more about it, you know. So it was a huge passion.
And was it like a fascination with them, or was it like, were you ever afraid of the birds?
No, never afraid. There's some species now that I still, you have to show respect. Not fear, but a lot of respect.
And in terms of the ones that you like, because I've seen some of the videos that you've done, like, with when they go, like, between legs and everything, and you have people, just you wait there, and I don't know how. Because the natural reaction would be, like, to try and, like...
No, it's working with a client. So when a client stands like this, and the bird's about to go through there about 40 miles an hour, just before the bird gets to him, well, when the bird's about 20 feet coming in at 40 miles an hour, you whisper in his ear, if you move, he'll take your eye out. Right. And they stay still. For whatever reason, they freeze.
Yeah, like fight or flight. It's the awkward moment. They go, what'd you say? And it's just like,
no, it's the one where you say, look, it's only went wrong once.
Yeah. And where's that person? Rest in peace. You know?
Oh, there can be accents. Like, yeah, I can remember the guy that actually taught me falconry. You obviously have a glove.
Yeah.
You know, the glove is a leather gauntlet, and there, that's where the bird eats, and that's where it gets its meat. And whatever meat's in there belongs to that bird. So when you go to the toilet when you're out in the middle of a field, you need to remember to take the glove off.
So when you say that, did the bird get any meat? That
it did. So I said to him at the time, it was good job, you know how to play the flute.
Yeah.
Being from Northern Ireland helped, you know.
Yeah.
You need to be able to hold that with covering the holes in places.
And how did he react? And how did you react to that?
Well, I wasn't there, thank you.
Because I was going to say, like, you know, obviously if there's a bleed, you have to put pressure on it. That's an awkward scenario. He's like,
I wouldn't be putting any pressure on it. No, so accidents can happen, but it's about, you know, we're out with clients, and thankfully, touch wood, we've never had an incident, you know, with clients at all.
Yeah.
Just in case.
And it's just about... you're working with a bird of prey, you know, they have sharp hook talons and sharp feet, so you just have to be sensible with them, show the respect they need, you know.
And I went to a wee place on holidays there, Wild Ireland, when we were over in Donegal, they had like a lot of animals that, so they, I think they're spoofing a wee bit, right, because some of the things they said are like, all these animals were native to Ireland,
yeah,
and then you go and see them, like, we're bears and wolves, and you go, nah, and the guy running them was like, my dream is to one day remove the walls from Wild Ireland. And the only thing I could think was, what about the fella that owns a cottage over there? You know, it's like
a grizzly bear going by his window in the morning.
I must say I do love animals, and bears especially, because I just think, like, as I saw a thing of a guy had found a dead bear in the woods, like, one day, and he'd held up its paw, and it was like, you never realise
how big they are
until you actually see something like that in another fella's hand. And with the birds, it's, I think that some birds of prey there as well that were kept in their but then you're just going, imagine they were just
let loose. Released.
Like, are there birds that are like dangerous birds of prey that are native to here?
So this is what we talk about. So we have two golden eagles at home.
Like the American symbol,
golden eagle.
Right, okay.
So about the same size as a bald eagle, And they're indigenous. They used to, yeah. You know, 1969 was the last breeding pair in Ballycastle. Forehead.
I mean, of course, the hub of
Eagles, Ballycastle. You know, go for an ice cream and a stick of rug. But you know, they were there in 1969. Mm-hmm. Was the last breeding pair there.
That's actually where I got my dog from too, Ballycastle. So yeah, it's a hub of animals.
The hub of animals. Life, yeah. But they were wiped out altogether until a gentleman called Lorcan introduced them into Glenveagh National Park up in Donegal.
Right, okay.
And in 2007. So there was a breeding programme now. Mm-hmm. There were 40 Scottish eagles, I think, came over from Scotland. Yeah. The Highlands of Scotland, they were brought over to Glenveagh National Park and 20 of them headed straight back to Scotland again. So they didn't like the accent, yeah. Or they wanted to wear a kilt, one of the two.
Yeah.
But they headed straight back home again. The rest of the 20 stayed and they provided a good breeding stock of eagles, you know. Then you have the Mullaghcontire and an Islay. Mm-hmm. On the west coast of Scotland,
yes.
But we are the motorway between the two. Right, so we have golden eagles in Northern Ireland, and they're 6 foot wingspan. You know, they're
big,
huge.
Big birds.
We do try to explain to people they do not come down and eat your children. A lot or of those videos,
your dogs or,
yeah, because
a lot of those videos are really.
Yeah, you see this toddler son of the side of the hill on an eagle coming down and lifting it and taking off.
Because if I knew where the birds were bait, I would bring my kids, I think, and just be like, just, you know, come and get them.
If it
them,
was an incident with know, nature, what can you do?
It's the way it's supposed to be. But I got, that's the thing. I think if you see, because I mean, I think we saw one, maybe a kestrel once, mm-hmm. when we were I think we're at maybe some National Trust place anyway.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my first reaction was, oh no, it'll get me. Like, I take it they just ignore humans, but we think they're
totally just, like even the golden eagles, you know, we've had we're very lucky. We live just outside Ballyclare, and there's a huge hill opposite us, and it's a highlight of, you know, one of the most populated areas for hares in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a moving buffet across the ground.
They're like, well,
and the motorway of, you know, between Scotland and Glenveagh is up there, and they're looking down with, you know, they can spot their meal 2.5-3 miles away.
Yeah.
When they're looking down, seeing that, they're coming down. So they're in County Antrim. You know, we've spotted, you know, a couple of golden eagles up in the hills in County Antrim over the last few years.
But they don't want to be near us.
Yeah. And then how do you go from them just being about flying, eating hares, to getting them? I don't use the word domesticated, because clearly you can't domesticate birds of prey. But how do you get them then to own them? Like, how do you, where do you get them? Do you buy them off someone?
So we've a breeder down in the south in Kilkenny that we get a lot of our Harris hogs off, because they're a very personable, easygoing hog. It's the same as a dog. You know, some people will only buy a dog off for a certain breeder because they know they have a certain temperament.
Yeah.
So we do the same, but we've had birds from Scotland, England, Wales, and Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all captive bred. They're not wild birds.
Okay.
They're captive bred, deliberately bred for the purpose of falconry.
Yeah.
We have a few rescue birds, you know, but all in all, they're mostly captive bred.
Yeah.
But for the purpose of falconry.
And see, what actually, in layman's terms, is falconry? So say you're explaining it to somebody, what...
So the art of falconry is, the actual falconry is catching your food with a trained bird of prey.
Right, okay.
So what we do is falconry based, but it's more handling and flying of birds of prey, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what we do is going out there with clients and letting them enjoy the company of the bird, and the bird flying free, coming back to their glove to fist, or watching the likes of a peregrine falcon coming past them at 120 miles an hour, you know.
So. Yeah, because that's my, like I say, when my wife saw it, she was like, this is amazing. I guess it's just, you need to see it. And again, I think there's that sick thing in her where she's like, I need to also see you seeing this, because you're, you know, I'd be a scaredy cat about anything like that. So she's like, I need to watch you just being terrified for a minute. But like, see, when you get them,
she may get her wish.
Yeah. I know. Listen, I'm not like that. Like, but I think with that too, like, do you ever have them and you were like, nah, they won't be good for the people? Like, do you ever have one like bird and you're like, they need to stay in the barn?
They're the ones that I enjoy myself, because they're the ones that I, you know, goshawks.
Yes.
I always said that, you know, if I didn't have a goshawk, Joe would be my goshawk, because they're the ones that are hard to work with.
I do take it as a compliment.
Hard to understand, hard to tame.
Yeah.
You know, they're quite a tenacious bird, you know.
What sort of size are they? Or what sort of are the range? I want to know the range of sizes.
Ranges of sizes. So the goshawk's medium-sized. Uh-huh. My, you know, about that from foot to head.
Yeah.
Tail and all, you're talking about that length.
Yeah.
But we have from a little owl that weighs less than your mobile phone, 160 grams.
Yeah.
She weighs to a golden eagle that's maybe this height with a 6 foot wingspan.
You were looking at me there like as if to go, it's about your size. You can just have one sitting there.
You can handle a big bird. You can handle a big bird.
Well, I know. Well, in my past, I'm a happily married man now. So But I think like it always fascinates me how, like, you know, you can have the animals that are wild and tame. Like my dog, for example, when we got him, I was very particular and pernickety about having the dog because we just had another baby, and then we had, when I met my wife Catherine, she had a Shih Tzu called Charlie, and I hated him. Like, see, at the start when I first met him, I was like that, and he knew. You know, whenever I went in, he was like, oh, you know, he looked at me like, you son of a bitch, don't you think about taking her? And like the first time she would work nights, she's a nurse, and there's a few times where she would just go on to work, and I said, where's Charlie? And she'd be like, oh, he's just out in the kennel, and this sort of weather, I was like, maybe leave him.
You start to feel bad.
Yeah, leave him around to me. You can, you know, drop him in your way to work and come and get him before I get home. The first day I got him in, he just walked into my house and just jumped up on the sofa and just looked at me. And I was like, you all right? And he just was like, you know, he just didn't like me at all. I said, right, come on to the toilet. So I brought him down the toilet, let him out the back, and he just stood in the garden and looked at me. Came into the house, closed the doors, pissed all over the floor. And I was like, I know you're doing
marking
that,
the territory.
Know, for badness. And then when he went to bed, the same night, he put him, she's like, he likes to sleep in bed with you. And I went, no, it's not going to happen. Because he stank as well. Like, you know, he's rotten, we think. And she's like, put the bed at the bottom of your bed, and he'll sleep there. And I woke up in the middle of the night and he's headbutt me. He jumped up the bed and he's headbutt me. I was like, what are you doing? And he's walking up and down and he wanted me to lift the duvet. And as soon as I like moved and the duvet opened, he's just straight under like a shot. So I knew he was up. And eventually like we won each other around and we became, you know, but
became
I knew he was. So like, yeah, I loved him when he died. I was, you know, I must be honest, heartbroken. But I said to her, look, we shouldn't get another dogs. We just had a baby. And then she went, you may as well, because it's not going to get more rough than this anyway. So I went, right, okay. So we got a dog, went to the Ballycastle to get the dog, and the breeder had all like all the papers from him and his mum and dad and like all the whatever else. I remember this, it was the weirdest thing. You know when someone says something to you, like just you sort of go, and then you go, I don't know why he said that, but okay. He goes, you know, listen, the dog's well bred. This is from a good line. He goes, he'll not pee in the house. You know, he's house trained, he'll be grand, he'll sleep in his crate, no problem. Yeah. And he goes, I shaved his arse for you as well. I remember going, like, and you know, you ask questions, like, I was like, but, and is there any reason? Like,
you,
was there
you,
like,
want, you want to feel as if, do I know why you've done that?
Yeah, because
you don't need to ask questions, so you go away and then wish you had your.
Yeah, but I said to him, like, why? Like, is there, and I'm thinking to myself, that's obviously, there's a reason for that, that must just be. And he goes, just looks better, mate. And I was like, all right, just, there you go. And I'll be honest, I've not done it since. You know, I was just, and I think he would just, like, because he got the snip there recently, and the look on his face, and whenever I went to get him, he was like, you've done me. Done me there. And is there any, like, in terms of their demeanors, the birds, or do you see any of them and you go, like, do they have personalities?
There's so many personalities. Oh. Yeah. Every one of them
really?
Have different personalities. You know, there's some comical birds, like
Oracle being.
You know, Oracle, she's a Eurasian eagle owl, one of the largest eagle owl species in the world. You know, she's sitting this height, 6 pounds in weight, and she was imprinted, so we got her at 7 days old, and she lived in the house with us for 11 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we don't have all these birds. Yeah. We've 20 odd birds at home. We don't have them all living in the house, but if they're a young bird, we'll bring them in the house for socialising.
Yeah.
So owls are very solitary, living in the wild.
Yeah.
These birds live till they're 70 years of age, have a bonded mate for life.
Yeah.
And you have to become that bonded mate.
Right, okay.
Because you want that bird to be sociable with you and sociable and feel safe around clients. So, you know, a week old she came and she was this bundle of fluff about this height with two big silly feet. And these massive eyes, and you wouldn't even know what animal she was so much of this. So my dad, he walks in, and, you know, he's, God love him, he's, what, 70 years of age, and he walked in and went, why the hell did you buy a monkey? And I was like, it's not a monkey, Dad, it's an owl. You know, this thing's sitting at the bottom of the stairs looking like a monkey. He thought it was some, you know, like, woolly monkey that we've got at Belfast Zoo. But it's all about socialising, you know, and that bird was running about. By 2 weeks old, she was walking about the place.
Yeah.
By 3 weeks old, she had got a foot fetish. You know, she just wanted to chase bare toes.
Yeah.
Anything toes related, she loved it.
Yeah.
Later on, she then made best friends with her husky. You know, we have a husky dog. She's 10 years of age. Three other dogs live out the back because they are a wee bit more robust. Yeah. She's getting old, arthritis. So she lives in the kitchen. Huh. And there's a baby gate between the kitchen and the hall, and the bird was staying in the hall for this period of time. As soon as she learned to jump over the baby gate, we thought, right, we need to get these introduced and see how they got on. And they got on great, house on fire, best buds, slept in the dog bed together.
Yeah.
Until she was about, what, 10 weeks old?
Yeah.
We came in, opened the door, and the fluff and the fur was meeting us at the door, and I was like, oh, shit. Something's went wrong. Ran down into the hall, opened the baby gate. There she was, lying in the middle of all this fur, in the middle of the kitchen, dog nowhere to be seen. I started panicking, looking for the dog. Eventually found the dog underneath the kitchen table. And I was like, "You all right?" She looked at me as if to say, "That's a lunatic." Yeah. The fur was thankfully the dog bed, not the dog.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So she's sitting there, happy as Larry, thought she was great. Other things she'd done, like joking down the stairs in a leopard print dress.
It doesn't sound disastrous, but it was.
A leopard is the number one predator of a Eurasian eagle in Asia. So this is how undomesticated they are. They all have this wild instinct, you know, to know what's what.
Yeah.
Joking down in a leopard print dress, didn't speak to talk to her, worked with her for about about 4 months.
Yeah,
would not work with her. So they all have their wee, you know, bits and pieces. You know?
And when you say imprinted, that's because the only time I've heard that term was in the movie Twilight.
Twilight.
So what does that mean? Like when you...
So the imprinting process, oh, you're going to get me into breeding here in a wee second as well. This is where it gets funky. Yeah. So imprinting is the process of making that bird believe it's part of your family.
Right,
so an imprint bird actually grows up thinking it's 6'2" and 15.5 stone.
Like Mowgli?
Yeah.
Essentially, right.
Pretty much like a wolf cub.
Yeah.
So the likes of falcons, you would do the imprinting process so you could maybe cross different species.
Okay.
Through artificial insemination.
Okay. Yeah.
This is an interesting part.
So it's like breeding, at the sort of?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Now, we would imprint our owls because they have a better social dynamic with people.
Yeah.
They're not scared. We have partially imprinted harris hawks, and that's so we can fly them at higher weights, and they're healthier, and things like that. You don't have to reduce weight to want them to want to come back for food. It's about a bond as well. Mm-hmm. So you have a better bond with a bird too. But the breeding side of things is you imprint them to, for them, they will think you're the parent for the first couple of years.
Right, okay.
They'll hit maturity and they'll think you're their partner.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. This is where it gets good. If you ever see somebody with a rubber hat, a wide brimmed rubber hat with wee divots in it, that's for collecting the bird semen.
Right, okay.
So you walk into your horny meal and that bird will jump up onto your head and will start screaming, flapping his wings and donate its semen on top of your head because you're its partner.
Right, okay.
So
these hats, they're designed specifically
for this. Or shoes.
Okay, because some of them have foot fetishes
as well.
People just going to the races or something.
You'd walk into the female and she'd be pretty much lifting her skirt with all her feathers up, showing her behind, and you'd go and inseminate the female. So you have a cross between a deer falcon and a peregrine falcon.
Right, okay.
You can get the best of both worlds. Of deer falcon's very large falcon, peregrine's very fast one, you get a very large, fast peregrine.
See, that you learn something new every day. I love that. And see, the oracle, was it the owl? Do owls fly to begin with? Or, because I have in my head like this weirdy, fluffy monkey penguin. No.
Not when they're very young.
So is that not one of the funniest things you're ever going to see?
Running about. They're hilarious. Yeah.
Are they quick?
They are really fast when you're trying to get your toes out of the way.
Yeah.
Because her feet's always huge.
The little owl we had, she was brilliant for spiders. See if you want to run a spider around your house. Little owls are great.
Yeah.
This time of the year, you know the way you're getting tarantulas coming into the house this time.
Oh, some of them are beasts. Yeah.
She used to run out the floor. Owl,
you can just hear this wee running across the floor, there's a spider. And the little owl was just darting here, there and everywhere, picking them up. So.
And when they're that size and you're in the house, where did you sleep? Like up in a corner somewhere or just on the floor?
Normally we have a purpose-made bed for them, or a crate, you know.
When they're so tiny, they are babies, so normally they'd be just sitting in the nest. So we normally buy, like, you know, the cat igloos?
Yeah, the cat igloos. Yes.
So we normally put them
species.
In there.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the little owl we bought with.
This sounds really cute, but they make terrible pets.
Yeah.
They are not pets.
No, they're not.
You know,
that's something we really have
You have the legs of Eurasian eagle owl. Her feet are nearly the size of my hands. They're huge. Yeah. With very powerful sharp talons.
Yeah.
And if you know, a child will go in, and the first thing a child wants to do is grab a toy, give it to a pup and go, no, you're not having it, and play with it.
Yeah.
You do that to an owl, they're going to think, why are you taking the hand out of me?
Yeah.
I've got talons.
Have one of
those.
Yeah.
You know, they can get quite vicious
and
quite territorial, or they can get a bit aggressive. So you need to understand the mindset of a bird before you bring them anywhere near, you know, a family member.
Because I do think owls are a bit freaky, aren't they? Like, if you don't know an owl, like, you look at them and go, like, I remember we were, I think as it was again, Wild Ireland, we brought in, I have a 5-year-old, or she's 4 now, but she's I don't know. Her birthday's soon, anyway. She's 5'4", whatever. She's one of those ages.
You will be in trouble.
I know. She's born in December. I'm like, yeah, she's still 4. We brought her this place, and we went in, and I was like, oh, look, there's the aisle. And she was like, oh, look, what's that, Daddy? And just look around, she's loads of dead mice, just loads on the ground. And I was like, I think that's, are they her friends? Yeah.
And they're sleeping. They're having a sleepover.
They're having a big sleep. But it was like, you don't realise it because you think they're like all in like kids' books, like the Gruffalo, there's an owl in it, and you think it's cute. And then you're like, oh, no, they're actually proper birds of prey.
Well, everybody thinks, you know, when we're holding our experience, you know, people will say, so do they all live together in a big barn?
Yeah.
And we're like, no.
Yeah, like the animals of Farthing Wood. Yeah,
because people have this lovely romantic nature that nature gets on with nature.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Everything eats everything else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, we always answer it with, well, the biggest bird is going to be really fat by the end of it.
Yeah. And is that something then, like, where do you house them all then?
So they're all individually housed. Yeah. Right, okay. They all have free flight enclosures. So they come home from flying and they normally, you know, people expect them to go into their free flight enclosure and just fly around all day. They don't. They're like,
busted.
I'm fed. Yeah. If I have food in my stomach, I'm sitting up here and I'm just chilling out, you know.
Yeah. And do you ever let them just out to practice or anything, or would you have any just escape?
We have had one red tail escape, remember? Red tail escape, he burst up through the roof of his netting, whatever, there was a weak point in the netting, and he was out for 3 days. We were out talking to all the farmers saying, can you look out for this bird? It looks like a big buzzard.
Yeah.
This is how he looks, and no sight of him at all. 3 days later, I went round to feed the rest of the birds, and he was sitting above the tree above his muse, as if to say, get me back in there, please. I've had to hunt for my food for the last 3 days.
That's not for me.
You normally just hand me it.
Yeah. So. And was there a problem then there for your farms nearby? Was he the sort that might have caused issue with any of the animals?
No, he was pretty chilled, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was actually lovely.
You know, like birds of prey will take wildfowl. They'll take ducks, they'll take chicken, they'll take things like that there, you know.
But not like... apparently you hear rumors like there's a condor in Bolivia and it'll eat cows. It'll come down and just get a cow and
lift it off.
Yeah. And you go, well, best not go to Bolivia.
No, people say to me, could they not lift my toddler? And you're talking about a golden eagle, and I maybe have one of the eagles like Zeus or Loki on the glove, and he's sitting there 6 foot wingspan, he looks imposing. Yeah. And I say, no, that could definitely lift my child. And I said, look, I don't mean to be ignorant, but your child looks as if they weigh 5 stone, give or take.
Yeah.
This bird weighs 8 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be able to lift a 5 stone child and fly off with it, you know.
Do you ever have arguments with people like that? Where you're like, without trying to be rude, you're just like, well, I think I know. You know, there's people like, I know.
We're actually really quite fortunate, I think, because
our clients are great, though.
They really are. Yeah, we, and I think that whenever people hear us talking, they really take on board everything we're saying, and they will ask questions, but we really like that.
We had one lady that came and she had a bag of bird seed with her.
Yeah, well,
she wasn't.
Well, no, we did
have you know, and she, the rest of the family were standing behind her going, you know, and she had this bag of bird seed, and she handed me, and she goes, look, I was really looking forward to this, I just can't wait. She says, here's a bag of bird food.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, thank you very much. And I looked into it, and she goes, well, your birds like that? And I says, yeah, the garden birds will love that. Yeah, yeah. She goes, but can you not feed the eagles? And I said, no.
Yeah.
And her son, who's maybe 30 or 40, he says, told you, Mom, look, forget about it. Please just put the bird seed in there and forget about it. She goes, no, they can eat bird seed. And I said, well, they eat meat.
Yeah.
You know, that's what makes a bird of prey. And I went to give her a glove 10 minutes later after doing the health and safety discussion. I says, here's the glove. And she wouldn't take the glove. She fell out with me.
Oh,
because I wasn't going to feed my bird the bird seed. So I was the only client, I think, that was a wee bit funny. Right.
Yeah, because no, I was just going to ask as well, because we sometimes have gigs that you go, oh, no, it's like old war stories. And you think about it, you're like, oh, no, that was the worst. And obviously, again, touch wood, hopefully, you've not had any, because like when you did the late night stream veil, sounds like it's a bit actually when you did a late night one. are there anybody on like pints or anything like that? Or are you, because I
there
imagine
wasn't that night, I don't think, was there?
Well, not that we noticed, I suppose.
No, but we've had like stag do's, we've had stag do's come out in hog walks. You know, we have the kids and the families and the dates, and the, you know, we've had a few first dates,
we've had engagements,
weddings.
You know, things like that, but we had stag do's and they were good fun.
Yeah, they're good.
Because there's nearly that bravado of, I'm not scared of these birds, you know, and there's grown men standing shoulder to shoulder and there's this bird flying through between their heads and there's one that's screaming like a girl, you know, it's great. So there's that male bravado that you can really have good crack with too.
No, but it definitely is something that I think it's like anything. I'm always scared of something until I know about it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and I remember my old job, I used to have to go and deal with people who had been committing antisocial behaviour, basically.
Yeah.
So I'd go there and be like, we've had a report of X, Y, and Z. I remember there was one, I went in the guy's house and the place stank of weed. You went in, you're like, oh, wow. And it was like, he walked in, he was just wiped out. And so like, so we had reports. And I was sitting on the sofa and he was like, oh, man, you know, well, you know how it is and all. And I just felt this like thing up beside me on the sofa. And I was like, what? And looked around. It was just a staffie. I jumped up on the sofa. And he was like, in my face, just going, I, and in my head, I was going, he's going to eat my face.
He's going
to eat me. He's going to eat my face. But I knew in that moment I had to try to be like, you know, I was like to tell this guy off, so I didn't want to put my hook. So I had to be like, you know, and he was licking my face and all, and thankfully he didn't eat me. But in that moment I thought, this is it. But I had to, so I think like in my head I would get worried about it, but I think if I actually were to see one, I might be okay, or I might shit myself, but I think I might it all depends. But I would like to see one day. I think
I would say last year was kind of good for us, you know, people weren't being able to go foreign holidays, so a lot of people came on our experiences. Not necessarily for a huge interest out of birds of prey, but more just to do something different.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people were like terrified of birds, and we're always going, anyone that comes to us and they're terrified, we go, birds of prey isn't something you normally work with. So there is a fear there for people, but once you get to work with them, but they still walk away terrified of pigeons. It seems to be the flapping.
It's the pigeons and the gulls that people are scared of. You know, not knowing what's going through their mind. Because a pigeon, when a pigeon comes off the floor, you don't know where it's flying.
Yeah.
When you're out with us, you're pretty sure of where the birds go.
Yeah.
No, I'm raging about a pigeon. I think I've told this story before. I found a pigeon in my back garden a good few years ago now. And do you ever see a bird and just go to yourself, That's a good looking bird. Like, it looks, that's a way better looking.
No, if he
looking.
Said that, he'd be in trouble.
But like this one, you know, you're looking, you're going, that's not just a regular pigeon. And whatever it was, I was like, that's, and I remember looking at it and there was a cat just on the thing going like, this is going to do me.
Yeah.
But the pigeon was just running about because it couldn't fly. I was like, something up here. So we went and chased the cat away, and it looked, and he had like a wee ring around his foot, and I was like, that's a nice pigeon here, there must be. So I think, what do you do with pigeons? So I got my recycling box, you know, for the glasses, emptied it out and said, in you go, and gave him half a loaf. And then I rang one of my mum's mates who is part of a pigeon club, and he was like, right, I'll come and get him and we can like look up the number and stuff and see. So went up, looked up the number, it was part of a pigeon, he was a racing pigeon by somebody who owned it over in Sunderland.
Right.
So he rang a guy came over in the boat to get the bird, because he's like, the wings are broke, but he was apparently like a real
good
prime
bird, good, probably.
But he got him to breed. And he didn't even say thanks to me. And I get a couple of grand for those birds, does he? Could have given me a tenner, you know, for sake.
But the pigeon men can be a funny bunch with us at times.
Yeah.
Because we fly peregrine falcons, obviously. Yeah. Peregrine falcons hunt pigeons.
Is what Kez was?
Kez was a kestrel.
Kestrel, right. Yeah. Okay. Hence name, duh.
Of course, duh. You know, there's like there's a place in the Moor Mountains called the Hare's Gap. You may have heard of it.
Yes.
And the Hare's Gap, there's a real predominant nesting site of peregrine falcons up there. And they went to the bottom of that nesting site, and there's a picking post, and that's where the peregrine will chase and catch pigeons. And they'll bring back the pigeon to that picking post, strip the feathers off it, and then bring the rest of the body back to the nest, so the feathers aren't all over the nest. Very cleanly. So they went underneath the picking post of this nesting site, and they found thousands of pigeon rings. Because that's where we've been picking them all apart, and there was just a, you know, like a pyramid of pigeon rings underneath this picking post. So the pigeon men were distraught over this, you know.
Yeah.
And I can remember we were doing experience.
No, the guy himself took it.
Yeah, he took it very well.
He took it very well now. Mm-hmm.
But there was a family out, and you know, we were flying the birds, and this gentleman, he was enjoying the whole day, and we came to the last one and said, well, we're going to fly their last bird, and it's a peregrine falcon. And I could just hear the... And I said, do you not like the peregrine falcon? He says, I'm a pigeon man.
Mm-hmm.
I says, oh, right. And he says, aye, they just destroy, you know, they're killers. And I says, well, look, they're probably doing you a favour.
Uh-huh.
And he says, how do you reckon that? And I says, well, they're catching the slow ones. He says, see the ones they're catching? They weren't going to be your race winners anyway.
Yeah.
Breed the ones that didn't come back, and the pigeon, the peregrine didn't catch. But no, he had good fun, didn't he?
He did.
He had a wee bit more respect for them when he seen them fly.
Yeah. The pigeon men are like, they're a different breed. Like, seeing them in your old job too. Like, and I again, with antisocial behaviour stuff, one of the things are, if you put up like structures, you don't have always pigeon huts. And you'd be going back, and then you'd be like... And I always hated doing it, because I sort of think, you know, if someone's done something, it's not really that big a deal. Yeah. But if someone complains about it, you have to, it's like the noise of them.
Yeah.
He was like, what do you want me to do? You're rid of that. I was like, yeah, kind
of. We're so lucky we're in the middle of the country. Because we've 20 birdhouses, you know, and the noise.
Yeah, look, I always think, I know it must be terrible for you, but I think it's nice that people at least have a passion, you know, to put their energy into
it. Yeah, that was always, I just hated going to people that I didn't think they were doing anything wrong, but you know, some complain, you have to. What are you going to do about this? Like, well, can I just let them do it? You know what I mean? Just let them go. And like, see the birds you have, is it constant noise? Do you just get any? Are you
it's quiet at night.
Depends if you ask her son, he would disagree.
Yeah, or, you know, her son's the typical 18-year-old that, you know, if he's wanting to sleep until 11, 12 o'clock in the middle of the day, why is the bird making noise at 11 o'clock in the middle of the morning?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, well,
it's the time they're up. Yeah. They're probably trying to get to do a bit of work.
Yeah.
But no, they can make a bit of noise, but nothing that's
it's normally if we're coming down the lane, they'll hear the van or the jeep. Yeah. So then they'll start to make noise, and just because they're wanting us to go over to them. Yeah. So that's normally feed them.
And what can you like do? You know, like when you come in the door, the dogs are like, oh, and you go give them
and pet them.
Do you have something like that to go over me? Like, there you go.
they don't like physical affection. Like, no. They don't take physical affection.
But they do like is going over to them and talking to them.
Yeah, they'll go over and have a chat with them. But you know, in the wild, a bird of prey gets touched for two reasons. It's either getting ate or bred with them. Yeah. They don't do any with the birds.
Yeah. It sounds like an old man. They're just happy to come in and have a chat, but don't touch me.
Don't touch me. It's like my granddad.
But I think, like, I remember seeing a thing on Twitter this week that it was like in movies, like actual, is it the golden like eagle or the big eagles don't make good noises. They're actually, the noise they make is like
like a chirp,
but the actual
chirp.
The proper ones are like, it's like a
red-tailed hawk.
A hawk.
I would love to hear you do that again, though.
Like a turkey.
I mean, that wouldn't be, like, if you saw a bird coming towards you, it's going, you'd
be like, come and get some. I can take this bird.
But I mean, I think that's when they need to be more realistic with that. I think in films, like, let them just have their
own voice. Their own let voice. Them have their own voice.
It's like Millie Vanilli, you know, like, don't, just because they can't.
It's like somebody this movie, it's like the older days where they had a really bad looking singer, so they just put a good looking person to mime and their voice behind
there
it.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's not fair.
But see, I love
we birds have rights too.
You know, because in my head, before I'd spoken these today, I thought, birds kill toddlers, they can eat left cows, they all sound devastating.
And they all sound...
But,
well, we actually do TV and movie work with the birds as well. The last bird we had was in the Northman, actually.
Right, okay.
With Nicole Kidman and Alexander Skarsgård, so we're looking into doing a bit more of that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you get to see any of them, or were you sort of just with, like, some of the other
cast? Yeah, well, it was actually one of our friends, a good friend of ours. He took the birds down in for us, because we had other commitments on that day.
I think the bird was treated better than the movie stars.
I think at one stage, you know, the movies, you know, like, it's Nicole Kidman, the big Vikings were all standing, these huge, big, you know, bear suits and stuff, and the heat and the lights and stuff coming on, and the sweat's dripping off them. And meanwhile, the bird's sitting there with one of the guys underneath with a fan up towards the bird. And every 5 minutes going, I think the bird needs a break. And everybody else was told to stay still in front of the lights, and the bird was going out getting a wee drink, a wee snack, and then back in again underneath the lights again.
See, so I bet you all them, because they're in the movies, think the same thing I think about big dinner. I just don't move, it'll get
don't
you.
Move, it'll kill you.
Yeah, it'll get you.
And then, done a bit for Kevin Hart as well when he was over.
Oh, nice. Yeah, did he come and see them, or did he?
No, we got rid of the pest birds. Well,
he did come round to see them, but not in a picture type.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do pest control of the birds of prey as well, you see.
Okay.
So it's an environmental way of getting rid of pest species. So your pigeons out of warehouses or gulls on top of roofs. You know, so one of our contracts used to have 3,000 gulls sitting on top of their big warehouse. You know, and the mess and the smell
stinking,
and everything they can do. So we went down there, and the noise, or the sound engineer was cracking up. He was saying, every time we go to record something, all I can hear is jackdaws, you know, crows in the background chirping.
Yeah.
And we're wasting film here, so we went in with the hawks, and we were getting rid of them, and it was for Kevin Hart's movie set.
Very nice, yeah.
So it's nice to do different things like that with the hawks as well.
I also want to debunk the myth of a bird poos on you. It's like 7 years good luck.
Yeah.
I want to debunk that.
It doesn't matter. We have not won the lottery. And we've been shit on
a lot.
We have. Yeah. A lot.
And which ones do the pick shit? Are the ones you're like, oh no, this is just...
The eagles.
Yeah, the eagles.
Yeah.
The eagles.
Also the eagle owl, though.
Yeah,
or it would be quite...
They normally give you a good warning, though, when they lift their tail up. Yeah. You just don't want to be behind them, because that shoots about 3 feet.
Normally, if he's holding the bird, you want to stand where I am, because I know what's coming out.
Yeah.
So you always stand beside me.
Oh no, I would not like to be... Because... Do they shit like normal birds, like just big mouth bird shit, or do they do turds?
So, what way do you think birds?
Yeah. But I heard how you think birds sound, so yes. I need to know what birds shit are like. So, it's that white projectile shit, is pretty much what it is. So, they lift their tail and they can project that 3 feet in one direction.
Oh my goodness. And the bigger ones, just you'd assume, just
get drowned. Yeah.
Lovely. And the what goes into like cleaning them? Like, do you have to get into that? That sounds like a day's job itself.
A lot of work. A lot of work.
Because I remember
cleaning and walls scrubbed and.
Yeah, purchase spray down.
Yeah, because we.
Child labour, though. We have a good few kids.
Nice. How old are your kids?
We've ranging from 23 down to 7, and then a granddaughter at 5. So.
Nice. Yeah. So you have a good squad there.
Yeah, we do.
Child labour's great.
Yeah, because my 4 or 5 year old, I don't know quite what age she is. She's good for stuff, but the 2 year old, she's like, nah, fuck it, I'm not doing it. You know, she likes to wreck things, and she'll do it while she's. So she went over to her bookshelf the other day, and just she knew the books were there, and she was just looking at me going.
And then she was like,
what are you
going to
do? And I was like, it's wild.
What are you going to do about it, big lad?
Yeah, and I said, well, actually nothing. As long as you're not making noise, I'm winning, you know. Yeah.
But our granddaughter used to get pans and just draw over the wall, and they'd be like, no, nah. And I used to be like, that's amazing. Because, you know, they draw on the wall, it comes off. It's no big deal.
No, I don't. The worst thing, I still, again, touch wood, nothing like that has happened yet with the kids. But I went out one day and came in when the dog was only a pup. And he's a golden retriever, so he's really white. And I went in, and he was just like sitting on the paws like this. And I said, why is your face pink? And I said, his whole face was fluorescent pink. His paws, he got out a highlighter, and he just ate in the highlighter. And I thought, right, I can't tell her what's happened here. She can't come home and see his dog. So I thought, I'll get him the bath. And he just does not like baths.
Yeah.
He absolutely hates it. So I don't know how, I wrecked the whole bathroom, flooded the bathroom trying to wash him, and he was just a nightmare. And I remember when he was really small, when he just got him, Catherine was big into, like, her previous dog was, she just her and the Shih Tzu, Charlie, and she would just, like, wash them and groom them, and that would have been part of her week, you know, getting them all fancy. She thought, I'm going to do the same with him. So we got him, and she was like, I'm going to take him out the back and wash him with a hose.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, I need to tie him to something to wash him. So it was, in her head, I don't know how this ever seemed to make sense to her. She goes, I'll tie him to the barbecue gas canister.
Oh.
And she's like, he'll be fine. He's only
not going to pull that.
I looked out the window and he's just running around the garden.
The gas canister is chasing him.
It's like,
circles.
Oh, it's a corner. We're gone. You're dead. He's dead. Now he's dead. I remember she goes, oh no. So I washed him yesterday. We let him out and he just loves to get into the mud.
Yeah.
Washed him yesterday. We got a new bench out the back and tied him that, and he was.
It gives him character, like, though, doesn't it?
Oh, he's great. He is great. Like, but he just loves to recognize.
We've Charlie, our male Harrisog, and he's the one that does all the, you know, he'll literally go through two people holding their hands like this together in a square, and he'll bomb through it.
Is he the moneymaker?
He's the one, the whole business was, he was the foundation the business started on. So he's like a
Charlie is worth more money than you, anyone could ever offer you for.
He is the business.
And I can remember we started out with hog walks, and one day, you know, this lady was wearing a bobble hat, you know, with one of the wee baubles on top of it, and it was rabbit coloured. And I never even twigged. And while we were out in the walk, you know, all of a sudden Charlie came down and left this bobble off the top of her hat and destroyed it.
Yeah.
So after a while, we started to go, right, we can't have bobble hats then. If clients are there, ask them to turn them inside out, things like that. Uh-huh. And I remember this lady turning up with two wee girls. I'm sorry if you ever watch this podcast again. And I said to her, look, could you just take the hats off for me with the baubles?
Yeah.
Are they removable? She says, no, they're not removable. Uh-huh. And I says, well, can you get the girls to either take them off or turn them inside out so the bauble's inside so the bird can't see it? She goes, no, definitely not. We're getting photos taken here. I says, well, look, it's for safety reasons because the bird will see that as a target and he might come down and try to take it off the beaker's
head. Might eat your kid's head, like, you know.
And we just wouldn't want the child being scared.
Yeah. And she says, no. She says, definitely not. We'll take the chance.
Yeah.
While the kids are going, we'll take the chance. You're speaking for us. You know? So I was like, okay. So I knew he wasn't going to, you know, come down and take the head off the child, you know. So we were out flying. We were walking through a part of the forest and Charlie was sitting way up high. and you know about his body language. You see him going like this here, and the head starts to, and his tail starts wiggling. He's like, I'm onto something. Yeah. I'm like, here it goes. And I shut my eyes because I knew it was going to happen. And he just came down, sped down as fast as he could, glided over the top of one of the wee girl's heads, put one foot down, lifted the hat off her head, and swooped about 30 feet up into the tree, sat for the next 10 minutes, stripping the bobble off it. And see, as soon as he finished, you could nearly see him putting his foot out and just dropping it. And it fell through the ground, and the wee girl went and picked up, and I says, oh, so they are removable.
And she's, was she apologetic then, or was she like, oh, sorry?
I actually thought it was hilarious. The two kids thought it was brilliant.
So it's normally the kids that find it really funny.
You have some of the birds that are just comic, like Charlie's. Charlie and Oracle would be.
His nickname is Cheeky Charlie.
So
the personality side of them is fantastic.
See, that's what I like. Because again, I think, like, for anyone who would be looking to go and get an experience, what is it that you offer as a?
We do a couple of different experiences. So the hawk walk is mainly getting to know an individual bird, such as the Harris hawk, so Charlie or Belle or Ember. She's only 6 months old, so it's about getting somebody out with a glove, and you become the falconer for the full hour. You're flying the bird for that hour. You know, that bird's coming in through the trees and the over the top of the ponds and stuff around Brecon Hill, which is a beautiful location. Coming back onto the glove, learning about the history of falconry, a 4,000-year-old tradition, you know. Right from Kazakhstan, Mongolia, right through medieval times, right through to modern falconry. So a lot of information, and you really get to enjoy the aspect of being the falconer. Then we do the full falconer experience, which is an hour and a half, which gives a group experience, or you can book it privately, where we bring out the likes of the barn owl, we have the Eurasian eagle owl. The little owl.
Is that the monkey owl?
The monkey owl. The one that turned into an owl after being a monkey. You know, she's 4.5 foot wingspan, and we get people on a nice summer's day, we have them lying like sleepers on a train track, and she's flying inches over their heads. You know, flying over, and you can feel the wind off her wings. It's beautiful. And then we bring out the golden eagle. We do a bit of a conservation chat with the golden eagles. Then we fly the Harris hogs and do tricks with Charlie, you know. And then we end off with a fast flying falcon that's flying past you maybe over 100 miles an hour past the clients. So
we obviously do photography days as well.
Photography days, hunting days. You can go out for a full day's hunting and actually see what they do in the wild, you know.
And then they catch their food. The Art of Falconry.
Yeah, the Art of Falconry is another half day experience where you're at the house. And a day in the life of me doing what we do around the house, or Joe, you know, looking after the birds, training the birds.
We don't make people clean any birds out now. That's the one thing we don't ask them to do.
But it's more about the training aspect of the birds, what we do in the background.
Well, that would actually be a smart move. Just to say, this is the experience, come on and clean the cages. And then to be like, well, that's the experience.
Do you know what, we may add that in as part of the experience.
At the minute, the most fun one at the minute, we're teaching the birds how to chase an RC plane. So it's like Top Gun. It's an RC plane designed for falconry that carries the lure or a wing of a bird that they like to chase. And they're both up in the sky chasing this, you know, RC plane around. That's good, correct?
At the moment, we're very good at flying the plane, and we're very good at flying the bird. The two together is interesting.
Challenging. The birds can fly better than I can fly the plane.
And is it just like a remote control job you have?
Control plane.
Because, like, you've seen all those horror stories of people having, like, drones, and then be like, this is how, oh no, crash drone. So, like, if you had that bit of kit, do you have to? A lot of pressure if you're going to bust it.
Well, it flies at 120 miles an hour, and the birds can be chasing it over that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, they're unbelievable. But what we will do, we will share the link to your whatever page you want to get on the hawk walks and get an experience, because that's one thing I definitely want to get in. I want to go and do it.
You have to. More than welcome.
I think we'll do that.
We also have to bring you up a surprise.
A surprise?
Yes.
Now?
Yeah.
Yes, I think
it's
so.
It's going to take me a couple of minutes to do it. But I'll go down.
Listen, let's give me a surprise. Might as a shirt or something. I'm open to a surprise. So David's just gone to get me a surprise. He's told me to put the camera up. Is it going to be like
all we need to do is put this on.
What is this?
On your left hand.
Oh no.
This is a big glove.
Oh dear. And is this to get the t-shirt for Hawk Walks?
It is, yeah.
And you've got for me? Oh no. Oh wow.
So this is Loki.
Hello, Loki.
And I can hear the voice changing there. Yeah. Hello, Loki. I mean, so if you come round this way,
Loki's got talents.
I'm going to have him sitting on your glove. So if you open your hand, I'm going to set him just in there.
Oh, no. He's lifting his tail here. He's not going to...
There you are.
Oh, wow. Hello, mate. He's not going to poke my eyes or anything.
No, he's not.
No?
So he is an 18-month-old golden eagle.
Oh, wow.
He is one of our birds that is on our experiences here at the mat, teaching people about these birds coming back into the
mat. I'm just protecting in case.
Does this feel like that Staffy moment?
I mean, it does. But he's like bobbing his head, and he's.
This is very unusual to him in the likes of this one.
Yeah, I mean, this is what worries me. See, when you go, it's unusual for him. See the lights, and it just. I watched a film there recently that. They had a horse in it, and the horse didn't like it, and then he just bolted and killed everyone.
So, you're waiting for that moment.
Yeah, just kind of, don't touch him with anything else. Just keep the hands
just
away.
Just keep your hand, like that.
I'm cool. Just keeping this here.
So it would be an absolute pleasure having you with us. Yeah, it really would. And you can see a few more birds. Yeah.
As I say, I know definitely your wife Catherine. Yeah. And your kids.
He's weary, all right, isn't he? Surprisingly,
he's about 8 pounds of pure muscle.
He is. I have similar leather straps for my own ankles that I just wear in private, but it's a good look. And does he go and touch me with his head?
He's grand.
He is.
He's good.
Can I just keep him here as a mascot?
Just sitting in the corner for a while. Yeah.
Oh, before he takes off here with one of the mics.
Where? I know. He fancies. The big wings. Just don't let him link. Lift his tail. Nice to meet you.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Yes.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Ray. Bring him just around a wee bit. Listen. So, David, Joe, thank you very much. Loki.
Thank you.
Big respect. Come on, run around in there. Thank you for coming on. And if anybody wants to check out our dog walks NIs, he's coming to himself. Hawk walks NI. The link will be in the description of the video. I will put some clips out of this guy. Guys, well,
thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thank you. I'm the Slack Guy.